springtime is in the air and I am feeling nostalgic. I'm also just kind of feeling kind of blah in the sense that I actually want to eat chicken nuggets. Remember in Super Size Me how the dude eats McDonald's every day for a month and he gets in this rut where the McDonald's makes him feel better, and then he just crashes, feels terrible, eats more McDonald's and feels good. Something about the chemical compound in it makes you feel better. I think in some weird, more subtle way, that I think is the case, because I just have this, like, I don't know. It's like I can imagine these shit fucking chicken nuggets, and I know they're gonna suck balls, but I just feel like it'll make me happier to eat them. So as I walk my way down the street to McDonald's, I got a bunch of miscellaneous songs. I just grabbed a miscellaneous gig of shit from the past 4 or 5 years. See what sparks memories and what I want to play. But what I'm gonna hang this around is the other day when I was hanging out with Julio, I finally found Scott Pilgrim, Volume 5, the comic book I was looking for a couple shows ago. And we were at, turns out Midtown Comics has 2 branches, I didn't know that. So I was at the other branch, the one near Times Square. And even there, this huge-ass, fancy-pants, really cool comic store only had 1 copy. 1 Scott Pilgrim Volume 5 tucked away, none of the other volumes. I guess word of this comic hasn't really spread yet, because the movie, I found out the movie starts filming in like a couple of weeks. But it'll be a while yet before the media blitz hits. But I'm still surprised that they had so little, that it's been so hard to track down. And the first volume of Scott Pilgrim came out in right around the time that I first moved to Vancouver. Comes out about once a year. It just seems like a really good skeleton to follow the path of, you know, I guess if you're going to break my life into pieces, there's the school years, you know, elementary, junior high, high school. Then after high school was the weird nether realm where I just kind of fucked around and didn't do anything. And then when I moved to Vancouver, that's when the current phase really started, that I think I'm moving out of now. And I am beginning to slide into something else. But it was a case of things in my hometown were not going great. I had a lot of really good friends there, people that are still my really good friends. But I never had a girlfriend, for instance, in my hometown, which is really my own fault. I don't know, I mean, even now, thinking about it, unless I went to school, I don't know how it could have worked out. I don't know. I guess if I had a job that wasn't at a comic store, I would just naturally meet more girls. But it was one of those things that was like, I guess bad, but there's a good side to it. That I kind of hit this level of desperation that gave me the escape velocity to get out of my hometown. Because once the dominoes started falling, they fell pretty fast. Like, the first place I moved into was literally 2 doors down from my parents' house. Just coincidentally, that's where my friend Matt was living and he needed a roommate. So it was barely a move out, you know? It's like so close that why even buy groceries? You can just go to my mom's house and still eat food. So I lived there for a year, and then I moved across the river into another place with Matt and some of his friends. And that's when everything moved really fast. I caught up on a lot of lost time extremely quickly. That's when I started going to different bands and going to bars. And my town is so small that you can become intimately acquainted with and completely sick of every bar and every venue in that town in a very short amount of time. And it really lit a fire under me to keep going, to move on, to go somewhere bigger and better. And I ended up picking Vancouver, largely just because it's the only part of Canada that's not a horrifying nightmare in the winter. It's got its own problems. It's very, very gloomy there in the winter, but at least it's not snowy. And I really don't think the weather can be underestimated in Canada. You really got to consider, if you ever were going to move to Canada, how much it really does affect and degrade your quality of life. It's fucking harsh. Yeah, in the Vancouver story, it was sort of an odd thing. It's that these guys I was living with, they had before gone up to Dawson City in the Yukon. And you go up for the summer and you work in a diamond mine. Not a diamond mine, a gold mine. And just fucking bust your ass all summer, but make a bunch of money. And they were talking about doing that again. So I was going to go up with them. But just with the understanding that I can't work in a goddamn gold mine. That's ridiculous. And it's like this little tiny city that, as far as I understand it, even in the summer, it's like during the big boom where everybody comes to work, there's something like 2,000 people. I could be wrong. It might be more than that, but it's not much. And basically everybody just lives in a tent. You just pay like $30 a month to rent a little plot of land. And every once in a while, everybody pitches in to rent a hotel room at the one hotel so you can all take a shower and watch some movies and shit. And I thought that sounded cool to do, just to do it, you know? I had no intention of working. I was just going to borrow some money from my parents and just go fuck around, write a novel or some hippy-dippy shit. But they ended up not going, which was fine. So I never did make it to Dawson, but that's probably just as well. I don't know that I would have fit in so great in that whole environment anyway. I got to get off this street, man. Fucking noise. Goddamn cars. I mean, I like the outside effect of doing a podcast while I walk around, but man, this noise gets a little tiresome after a while. So I was thinking, after the Yukon thing, if I'm already out west, I'm already doing this thing, let's go check out Vancouver. And I really had no idea what to expect about a big city. I guess I just had like music videos and shit in movies, and basically what New York is what I expected. But I remember I would like just sort of try to visualize in this city that I'd never been to and didn't really know what it was like, but how is this going to work? How am I going to, having no friends and knowing nobody out there, how am I going to meet people? How am I going to do this? And I made some efforts to see if I could get people to move out there with me, but nobody was up for it. So in the end, I moved out all by myself. And I actually remember that the day I got to Vancouver was the day of the final episode of Friends. Because I remember the very first season of Friends when I was still in high school. I didn't mind it. I guess I was in 10th grade. I thought it was actually pretty funny. And then it lost me pretty fast. So I hadn't seen Friends in like years and years. But it was kind of a weirdly comforting thing, you know, to be in this weird new town. And I had a hotel just for a couple of days. And just to watch Friends and see all the fucking, see what happened to all these characters, where everybody ended up. And I really am a fairly firm believer that pop culture is the only culture. All the classics, all the enduring deep shit, that was the pop culture of its day. The shit that will endure from now is the pop culture from now. I'll take Joss Whedon and Buffy the Vampire Slayer over fancy pants, museum art bullshit any day. But I remember, not to get all emo on you, not like that's so crazy for this show, not like I've never tread those territories before, but I have a very strong memory of like that first day in Vancouver, checking through the paper, looking for apartments and trying to sort things out. And I remember I was so unworldly, I didn't even really understand the difference between like getting an apartment and like shared accommodations, where if you look under just apartments, then that's a whole place where you're expected to probably get some roommates. So it's going to cost you quite a lot of money. And that didn't occur to me. Because also, everyone talks about how Vancouver is the first or second most expensive city in Canada. And if you're careful, it's not so bad. It's no New York. But I was just taking these things at face value. I was like, okay, I got $2,000 in the bank. And at that rate, like, I can't last with this amount that this costs. And then later I figured out I was looking in the wrong section and that I should be looking to just rent a room. It's way more doable. But I definitely remember taking a bath in that hotel and just feeling the crushing weight of this decision I had made to move all the way out here by myself. And it's like the do or die, the sink or swim, fly or die, you know? Like, I can't just move back, you know? Oh no, I've been gone a week, didn't work out, I'm coming home. You know, that'd be fucking ridiculous. So I definitely shed a few tears in that bathtub. Even the power of the Friends finale was not enough. But largely that all worked out. I was out there for like 2.5 years before I finally came home. But that's more of a preamble than I intended, so let's play a song. Let's find a song from before I moved to Vancouver. Ah, here's a perfect one. It's a little bit of a somber tune. This is, I'm quite sure they're Canadian. This band's called The Grapes of Wrath. This is a song called All the Things I Wasn't that I think I first heard when I was in ninth grade or so. Though it had been out for a while. It's a pretty old song. Yeah, a little bit of a somber ditty, but kind of nice. Kind of appropriate, although, honestly, the day I remember the most being in that house, the last house I lived in before I left for Vancouver. So I just remember this one day. Might have told this story before, but I can't remember what happened. I remember Sloan played that year, and everybody went out. I organized to get everybody tickets and stuff. And I don't think it was that night, necessarily, but right around that time, I just remember staring in the bathroom mirror of that house, and, you know, it could be right out of a fucking dramatic teen movie. Just like, staring myself down, of just like, frustrated with how locked down I felt in that town, and how immobile I was, and how clear it was that my life was not progressing and would not be progressing until I did something. And yeah, it was a fucking stare down. It was a fucking teeth gritting time of just knowing that I had to fucking do something. So this song doesn't necessarily fit with that vibe, but it's still, it's a nice little song.
Hours of hiding spent apart, the wall was all we'd share. About the closest you could get, about all I would bear. Don't tell me all the things I wasn't, could have made this big a difference to all the things you are.
So I went to McDonald's, and man, they have like the standard fucking chicken nugget combo. It's a 10-piece combo, you fat fucking fat fucks. I guess there's a 6-piece too, but something about that 10-piece made me reconsider So instead I got an Angus burger. And I order this fucking thing and I go sit down, and just as soon as I pick it up and I feel it in my fingers and I see this fucking bullshit half melted squares of processed cheese and fake ass bacon and stuff, I'm just like, oh Lord, I have made a mistake. I should not be eating this. I made it through about 3/4 of the thing, but wow, that is fucking gross. And of course, no bathroom. Even McDonald's, man. McDonald's, it's a powerhouse of having money and shit, and they can't even keep a goddamn bathroom in service in New York. Nothing, nowhere. So fucking tired of this place. Alright, let's skip forward a little bit in my Scott pilgrimage. So now, it's, say, 3 months later since I moved to Vancouver, probably about that. I was working at a coffee shop, the Blends on the corner of Davie and Granville, 24-hour. Open every major holiday. Never, ever, ever is closed. Something about that always seemed vaguely creepy to me. So there's this girl there named Erica, who I quite fancied. And I found out that my friend Ryan, who worked there, also liked her. And when we found out, we set up this, like, dopey-ass game where we would each go on dates, and then whatever information we'd learned on the date, we would pass on to each other. Like, I don't know, a weird, like, let the best man win, but also let's pool our resources. Gentlemanly combat. I don't know, it was fucking weird and dumb. And honestly, I started feeling a little bit bad about it. Like, we were kind of manipulating this girl in a way. She didn't know we were playing some silly-ass game. And, I mean, let's be clear, it's not like the game was the point. I really liked that girl. I really wanted to date her. But when I found out Ryan liked her, I don't know, it seemed like the thing to do. I can't remember who even came up with that plan. I think we were just spitballing and just decided, yeah, fuck it. Let's give this a go. And at some point right around then, Cal, who owns the comic store I used to work at, it's called Strange Adventures. He's the guy that owns, there's one in Halifax and one in Fredericton. I worked in the Fredericton store, and he runs the Halifax one now. He sent me a box of comics and stuff. And in there was the first volume of Scott Pilgrim. Now, I'd heard of Brian O'Malley, who does that comic, before. My friend Brad knew his work better. He used to do this stuff called Impro Manga, where you'd draw a page of a comic book and then someone else would do the next page, or maybe it was 4 or 5 pages ago. So I knew he did that stuff. So when he put out a book through Oni Press, he drew Hopeless Savages. That was the big thing. The second Hopeless Savages collection. He didn't write it, he only drew it. But it was the best one. It's really fucking great. And after that, he did a comic called Nowhere, maybe? It's about cats. Lost at Sea, that's what it was called. I didn't like that one as good. But then Scott Pilgrim came out, and it was just, like, fantastic. It's just the coolest fucking comic. It starts out really kind of slice of life-y. It's this guy, he's like 23, just him and his friends and people he's dating and stuff that's going on in his life. And then all of a sudden, it breaks into this huge battle at the end of the first one, and it turns out he lives in this weird pseudo-Nintendo world where it's like real-life Toronto, but when you beat up an enemy, you know, you get in a fight, then they turn into coins like River City Ransom. And sometimes you can get power-ups, and there's saves and extra men and weird shit. And it's just a really fucking great comic, and I really liked it. And I remember I sent a letter, actually, to Brian O'Malley. And at this point, I didn't have a computer. I had to go to the library to check email and stuff. So I sent him an email from the library, just telling him how much I liked his comic and how I briefly recounted this, like, silly little battle for the woman's hand thing that I was doing, and how somehow his comic just made me feel better. It just made me feel like everything was gonna work out. Now the song I'm gonna play here is pretty well known. This is The Shins, Caring is Creepy, that was on the Garden State soundtrack, because I remember when I first moved to Vancouver, I saw the Garden State trailer when I went to go see Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and I was kind of drunk. And that trailer came on, the teaser trailer, and it just blew me away. To this day, I just watched it last week, even just on YouTube. It's amazing. It's like the coolest little piece of fucking video ever. I love it. It's just pure kind of emotions. It doesn't really get across any real information of any kind, but it's fucking fantastic. I love it. As far as semi-abstract video goes, that's what I aspire toward. And I remember I did a podcast way back, Ham Radio 9, I think, was just all about Vancouver, and I remember saying that this song kind of just sums up moving to Vancouver for me, for whatever reason. Just keys into nice memories. This is The Shins with Caring is Creepy.
I think I go home and mull this over before I drown it down my throat. At long last it's crashed, it's colossal mass is broken up into bits of my world.
Now, by the time Volume 2 of Scott Pilgrim came out, me and Erica were dating. And I remember I introduced her to the comic. I eventually told her about the thing with Ryan. She didn't care. She insisted that I would have won anyway, that she wasn't really interested in him. But, I don't know, Ryan, he had some style. I don't think it'd be impossible. But I introduced her to Scott Pilgrim, and she liked Lost at Sea better than I did. I remember at one point, I remember Erica went to a comic store, like, on her own and picked something up, and I was like, ah, that's cool. I don't know, there's something just in the heart of a nerd. It's nice to corrupt a girl into the ways of comic books. And I remember right around that time, we went on this, like, month-long vacation back east. I had seen my parents for a bit. They came down to visit me for probably like a week. in October. I moved in the summer. They came down in October. And then this was the next summer. God, can you believe how loud that is? Man, I don't know if this is picking it up that well, but my fucking head is rumbling from that goddamn airplane. Ah, I'm so sorry that I keep complaining all the time. I'll be out of here soon enough. No more airplane complaints. So we went on this big long vacation, and I quit the job at the coffee shop rather than ask for time off, because it was a long time. It was like 5 weeks. I just plain quit. And we spent 2 weeks in her hometown, London, Ontario, and then 2 weeks in my hometown, Fredericton, New Brunswick, and another few days out in Halifax. And Brian O'Malley had just moved from Toronto to the Halifax area. And he knew Cal, because Cal ran the coolest comic shop in town. And kind of became, you know, friends in some kind of capacity. I think they were playing softball or something. So I got to meet him. And I was actually wearing a Scott Pilgrim t-shirt when I met him. Me and Erica met him and his girlfriend, Hope Larson. And I'm sure I must have looked like a real Goonie fanboy that I was wearing like a sweater because it was kind of chilly that day. So I had to lift up the sweater and be like, hey man, look, I'm wearing your shirt. This is you. This is the Scott Pilgrim shirt. And that was really cool. The big cross Canada trek and then back out to Vancouver. And during that trip, I had this little orange MP3 player with a 500 meg SD card. And again, I didn't have a computer, so I would just go to these internet places like in the back of convenience stores, and they have like the internet room, and jump on LimeWire and just download a mess of junk and toss it on. That's how I downloaded all the Keith and the Girls back in the day. I just go to these little internet places and stock up. And I remember I had some podcasts and stuff on there, some Keith and the Girls probably, because I mean, what else was there that was worth listening to? And I only kept like 4 songs on the MP3 player. 4 Elliott Smith songs. So as I ate up the podcasts and deleted them one at a time, nothing was left on this little thing except these 4 songs. So let me play a couple of those. These are some semi-obscure Elliott Smith B-sides and such that always bring me right back. Specifically, I remember my parents' law office, the second floor is apartment buildings. I mean, just rooms. And one of them happened to be free when me and Erica were visiting. So that's where we stayed. And I just really can really clearly visualize it right now. That room, my little MP3 player, and these songs that I just ended up listening to over and over. Let's see if I can remember what they were. It was Coast to Coast, Plainclothes Man, How to Take a Fall, and something else. I can't remember what the 4th one was. Ah, The Enemy Is You.
Yeah. second home. Always trying to keep me alone. An easy way to lose it all. Always selling all those fills over by the west side rail.
Now, by the time Scott Pilgrim 3 came out, me and Erica were broken up, and things were starting to unravel out in Vancouver. I was really holding on hard because I was afraid that if I went back home to my hometown, I might never leave again. I really wanted to try to get back on top of things in Vancouver, but it was just going way bad. Like, I don't know, I just got stuck in this rut where I just... In between those times, I had worked at the porn store and quit that job and tried another job or two. And, yeah, it was just sort of... And things with Erica had been so good. We even lived together real briefly, I don't know, for 2 months. That when they were good, it was fantastic. You know, finally I had a girlfriend. I was in this cool relationship. I was kind of playing house and I was really, really digging it. I just remember how great it seemed that all I had to do was work at a coffee shop and I was buying my ticket to Vancouver, this wonderful fucking city. So when that broke, I didn't go back to being on my own so well. Did not go well at all. Just kind of got stuck in this rut down in the dumps. And then I got fucking pepper sprayed by some no good Asian thugs that wanted to steal my laptop. Yeah, I ended up getting a laptop just because my friend Greg needed money, so I basically bought his laptop from him as like a pawn shop, then he could buy it back anytime. And it got stolen, so My friend Mark did come out and visit me, though. He was actually there when I got bear sprayed, thank God. I say bear spray because it's like pepper spray, but it's way stronger. It's for bears. That's what you get in the northwest of Canada. But yeah, the clock was ticking at that point. Time to go home. And the song I'm going to play for this era is Gym Class Heroes. I've got the Gym Class Heroes album before this time, but I remember when Mark was there. Mark was into a lot of emo bands that I didn't know and couldn't really get into that much. But I remember trying to hook him on the Gym Class Heroes. Didn't work so well. But my favorite song from my favorite Gym Class Heroes album, it's called Simple Livin'. And I think I haven't played this one since like the very first ham radio. And I really, really like this song, man. I love this song. Let's go that far. I adore this song. This is Simple Livin' by the Gym Class Heroes. Now, by the time Scott Pilgrim Volume 4 came out, quite a lot had happened. I did move back to my hometown, and I ended up being like a live-in babysitter for my cousin Dan's daughter, Allie, for like 8 months. If you go on my YouTube page, you can find a few little videos from a couple of years ago. Me and Allie doing stuff, hanging out, having fun. And it really was fun. I am surprised at how well I did. There's a lot of stress to having a kid that gets taken away when it's not your kid. You know, I'm sure I would have had a lot more worry and general anxiety and probably overparenting if she were my daughter. But since I was just the babysitter, it was kind of just fun. Teach her the alphabet, watch Blue's Clues, just, yeah, shit like that. It was good. And it definitely filled some kind of void after things broke with Erica and I didn't have my little playing house anymore. Well, now I get to play dad, you know? I get to be the guy that fucking gets some groceries and buys diapers and does the laundry. And, yeah, I had no problem. I mean, we had some problems, you know. Me and Dan had a bit of a dysfunctional household, but overall, lots of good memories. It was very... I felt effective. I felt like I was doing something worthwhile, an important use of my time. So it was a lot better than just heading back to my hometown and just stagnating again like I was afraid I might. It really was a good way to spend that year. But ultimately, I knew... since she's not my daughter, you know, that's like I was saying, there's that, it's, you, not only is it easier to detach, you actually can, you know, I could leave. And I felt kind of guilty about it. I really didn't want to, you know, I mean, me and Allie spent so much time together that year. She was like 2.5 when I first moved there. All kinds of time together. So I knew it would be, you know, a loss for me to go. And ultimately, I mean, it was, she ended up moving in with her grandparents, and I'm sure they are doing a very good job. So it all worked out. But I was kind of torn. It's like, I want to stay here with Allie, but I need to try to get my own life going also. So I tried moving back out to Vancouver. I moved out with Matt. Matt was there for 3 months, and I stayed for 3 more months after that. But it did not go as well that second time. Just the blast of like super excitement from that first time of really feeling effective in my life and really feeling accomplishment wasn't there the second time. The second time, I already knew the city. I ended up going back to a job I had had before as a projectionist at a movie theater. And it was still not bad, but it was like, it was a pale echo. It didn't feel the same. I didn't feel like it was gonna work. I remember I was actually in the Danny Boyle movie, Sunshine. I went to see that Danny Boyle movie, Sunshine, and I remember it was specifically, I was in the theater watching that movie, way down in the front row, it was all dark, nobody could see me, and that was like the flip side of sitting in the bathtub when I first got to Vancouver. Again, I shed a tear or two, but in a way different context and capacity. And without the desperation of the first time, but also without the feeling of potential. It really just felt like this isn't where I'm supposed to be right now. But seated in between all these events, I had kind of gotten to know Keith and Hemda. I had opened for Keith twice, done some video editing work for them a little bit, the Atlanta show. So Hemda suggested, hey, why don't you try moving to New York? And I was like, you know, that's a fucking cool idea. Because, I mean, if moving from my small town to the much bigger town of Vancouver was so empowering that time, man, moving to New York, what's better than that? You know, if you can beat New York, you can beat anything. And in the 1 month between coming home from Vancouver and moving to New York, that's when Scott Pilgrim Volume 4 came out. And I borrowed this copy from my friend Brad. So for this song, I remember Allie was mostly disinterested in music, which I guess 2.5, 3-year-old, you know, what the hell did I expect? She got like kind of liked, you know, things from kid shows and stuff. We just got a letter. We just got a letter. We just got a letter. I wonder who it's from. But I remember trying to kind of sneak things in, like how Devo had this side thing where Disney got a bunch of kids to sing Devo songs, Devo 2.0. And I was like, hey, it's kids singing. You might like this, right? It's Devo. But somehow she could tell that it was like a cool hip band that I liked. She's like, I'm not having any of this. This is your shit. This is not my shit. Go get that song. Go get that CD where there's 26 songs and each one is about a letter of the alphabet. I was like, oh, okay, I guess we'll listen to that again. So I'm going to play a Devo song, sort of. This is a nice piano rendition of Gut Feeling that is probably my favorite Devo song. So this is just a cool little piano version that this would fit so good in a movie or something. It's got this nice score-ish epicness to it. It's cool. So, Scott Pilgrim 5 just came out. Volume 5, one more to go. And in this ensuing year, as this show has chronicled, New York kind of fucking chewed me up and spit me out. I did not do so well. For further details, please see these past shows. I met Ian, we dated, we broke up. All kinds of shit happened to me. And now I'm about a little less than a month away from heading home. Or a little more than a month. So where will I be when Scott Pilgrim 6 comes out? And the Scott Pilgrim movie? Who knows? We shall see.
Paper face till I moved to the West Coast, where I found that to be smooth. I had to wear a paper face. That's alright. This is one thing. How am I supposed to sing when you stay in my way? When you stay in my face? Until she hit New Orleans. That's alright.